This week's episode of Slam Fire Radio is dedicated to the memories of Ronnie and Carol DeGroot, who tragically lost their lives earlier this week. Ronnie was a driving force at the Restigouche Gun Club, and he will definitely be missed.
Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.
Hello and welcome to episode 110 of Slam Fire Radio for June the 5th. I am one of your hosts, Owen Flewelling.
And I'm another one of your hosts, Matthew McClatchy. And Trevor's not here.
Again.
I don't even know why he's not here this week.
Isn't he sick?
He might be sick. He was sick the other day.
We know he's sick in the head. But.
Well, in the head, yeah. But that's different. No, I'm not sure. I think he told me, and I probably just wasn't listening. So these things happen. So anyway, Trevor will be back next week, we hope.
Yeah. So. Okay. Matthew, what did you do with guns this week?
It wasn't a complete wash. I actually did have a bit of gun-related activity. I took my Savage Mark II FVSR out and did some shooting with it in the gravel pit just to get some bolt-action shooting in just for some fun. And I have to tell you, I hadn't done a whole lot of shooting since I got that linear muzzle brake. But the difference is just astounding with it on and with it off.
Sound-wise, you mean?
Oh, my goodness. Just, it's remarkable. It's like shooting .22 out of a 24-inch barrel as opposed to the very short barrel that it does have. It just redirects all that sound downrange away from me, and it's a pleasure to shoot. It really is. There's no crack. There's no nothing. Anyway, it was a lot of fun. Reinforced how accurate it is. I mean, I was picking little. I didn't pace anything off. I didn't measure anything. I was just sitting in the gravel pit shooting rocks on the other side of the gravel pit, and it was probably 170 meters away. So. You know, long enough for 22 for sure, and yeah. I was hitting what I was aiming at, so.
Cool.
A lot of fun.
You do that normally, though.
I do. Yeah, that's what I do for fun. Whenever I'm bored, I toss a rifle in the truck and hit the gravel pit and just shoot stuff. Mm-hmm. But speaking of the FESR, I noted before that one of its favorite ammo brands was the CCI Standard Velocity. And I had mentioned that I had been having a lot of trouble finding it, and I had been using CCI Blazer as a replacement. And the CCI Blazer does do very well. But while in Fredericton, I happened upon some Standard Velocity. And so I bought two. I was going to buy the whole brick until he showed me the price at $76 or $77, which... was a bit more than I was willing to pay for 500 rounds of ammo, seeing as I'm used to paying $30. So I did buy two boxes, though, and so the two boxes will be put to use. I will be doing a compare and contrast between the two brands of ammo, the CCI and the Standard Velocity. And if there is a marked increase in the difference, then I will, you know, cough up the extra money and buy the CCI stuff. But if there's not much difference between the Blazer and the Standard Velocity, then I'm just going to stick with the Blazer. I mean, I'm not a competitive shooter when it comes to my .22. I don't need the absolute smallest groups possible. I just need to be, you know, close, very close. So that was fun. While in Fredericton, I went into the local gun shop, and this is actually where I got the .22 ammo. And sitting at the counter was this bearded fellow, and and he recognized my voice and said, "Hey, you're Matthew from Slamfire, aren't you?" And I looked a little closer this time, the second time. "Ah, you're Derek from the Machine Gun Museum." So he was there. Apparently he's the gunsmith there at that store, and I think I knew that already anyway, but he said, "Well, you better come in the back." So I went in the back, and of course he handed me a Thompson submachine gun. We got to play with that for a little while. He let me dry fire it, which was really neat. Not as much fun as actually dry firing or actually firing it, but still pretty cool. So there was that, and then he handed me a commando something or other, which is like an Uzi looking type gun.
Is that a gun with no underwear on?
It could be. No, it didn't have a mag in, so it was going commando.
There you go.
So it was a 9mm submachine gun of some sort. And, you know, like I said, Uzi-like, but then he just handed me an Uzi. So I played with an Uzi for a little while, and that was neat. And this was a Hebrew Uzi. It had Hebrew markings on it as opposed to the English. Like, it wasn't made in the States. It was actually made in Israel, which was really cool to note its history. I got to hold the precursor to the Beretta Bobcat, I think it's called. It's the one with a tip-up barrel. It's a little pistol. It's like small. I could just, you know, stick it in my sock and it would like disappear. Like, it was just tiny. I think it was like a little 5 or 6 or 7 shot magazine, single stack, 22, and then you just press this little lever and the barrel pops up and you just stick another round in there and close the barrel and you don't have to rack the slide. It was really, really neat to play with. I love little guns, so there was that. There was a bunch of other little ones there too that I played with. There was some single action handguns, some revolvers and stuff. And then the submachine guns were cool. The little pistol was cool, but this really caught my eye. A M305, I think, because I can't imagine somebody doing this to a Springfield. But it was an M305, so a mini or an M14 clone, and it had been rebarreled to 22-250, which I thought was fascinating because here in New Brunswick, we got that stupid caliber restriction. So that would actually be a rifle that a person could carry and hunt with all year round.
Yeah.
So it wasn't light. It was definitely heavy. I don't know if it would be something that you would want to lug around while you were walking, but you know, it would be something that you could take with you in your vehicle, and then when you got to where you were shooting, get it out and, you know, bipod on it, a nice scope, and like do some long range shooting with the 22-250. That coyote hunting, that would be great. So anyway, it was really neat. He's always got his hands full of just unique, weird, eclectic kind of firearms, and it's so much fun to visit with him. The knowledge he has and the guns he has access to are just amazing. It's just so much fun to get in there and to get hands-on with some of these really neat guns. So that was sort of the highlight of my week. Other than that, I didn't really do anything gun related, but I think that does cover it. I mean, I played with submachine guns. Yeah, even Trevor couldn't top that this week, I don't think. He could have a couple of weeks ago because he was there and just got to play with the same guns I did, but this time it was me, so.
Yeah.
Anyway, so what did you do, Owen?
You did a lot more than me because I didn't do anything.
You didn't do anything. Nothing at all, eh?
The single dad thing kind of really puts a damper on that.
Yeah, it does. So, yep.
Yeah. I sold some holsters and mag holders and stuff to people getting ready for their Black Badge course this weekend.
Oh, that's cool. It. That's right. There's a Black Badge coming up in Woodstock, isn't there?
There is, yeah.
I was going to come down for that, but instead I'm going to come down and go flying instead. So,
oh.
I should text Jack and see if he wants to go.
You should text. Yes, you should. Well, yeah. I was thinking that if we were available, we could swing by there in the afternoon maybe, because I think they're going to do the classroom portion in the morning and then the perfect shooting in the afternoon and then the match on Sunday.
Well, not to make plans on the air with people listening, but why don't we head to the airport first thing in the morning and then go to the range and help them out with the Black Badge in the afternoon?
Quite possible.
Perfect. I'll be down tomorrow night. Right. We should really talk about these things before or after.
We should, really, yeah.
Whatever. I'm not editing it out.
All right. Well, if that's it, we'll move on to some upcoming events.
All right, then.
We have the 5th Annual Charity Shoot, June 27th. All proceeds going towards the Dalhousie Nursing Home and Foundation. $25. There's going to be a barbecue run by Claude Martel. That's Chris Kingston's son-in-law. All proceeds will go to help cover expenses related to his cancer treatments.
Yes.
I believe so, yes. Yep. The Paracourse on with Tommy. That's Tommy Nelson. That's July 3rd, followed by an IDPA mini match the next day. One spot left in Tommy's course. Go to paratraining. That's para-training.com, and you can sign up there for the course.
I actually texted Tommy today to get confirmation of his flight details and when he's flying in. So I was like, "Hey, can I get your flight details when I can pick you up at the airport?" He's like, "Who is this?" Oh, let me start again. So anyway, now he has my contact info, and now he knows who's texting him. But yeah, no, his flight's confirmed. He's flying in, just a couple days. It's actually 2 days after the charity shoot. So anybody who sticks around a couple days after the charity shoot can meet up with Tom for maybe a day or something before you guys have to leave. If you guys have to leave, I mean, you guys can stick around. Trevor doesn't mind permanent house guests. I think I may be speaking for him, but I don't mind.
Not here, so why not?
Yeah, he's not here. Why don't you guys all just spend the week?
Yep. And eat his food, drink his beer.
Yep. He would love that.
Carbine Vitals 2 Clinic, September 4th and 5th. Currently, there are 7 unpaid spots available.
We're actually not entirely sure on that right now because I haven't spoken to Daniel for a couple of days. So
there could
some
be
of those,
some fewer than that, but
yeah. There are still spots available, I believe, because I think he would contact me if it was full. So
if you are listening to the show and you haven't signed up, sign up. That's really all there is.
It's going to be an amazing course.
Yep. To sign up, you call Thunderbird Tactical. Ask for the Mr. Daniel Shaw and the number. I'll wait a second. Everybody get a pen, get a paper. Okay. 1-316-613-2336. SummerSlam, August 8th and 9th. Registration is open on the Restigouche Gun Club website. T-shirt orders. Anyone who hasn't paid needs to pay, right?
Unless you're American and you're coming to the charity shoot.
Okay.
Because otherwise you have to send a check and it's cross-border stuff. It's crazy. If you're American and you're not coming to the charity shoot, you're going to have to work out something. But you're coming to the charity shoot, you can pay me there. That's no problem. Payments are coming in.
Send a Canadian money order.
Yeah.
Go to the bank. No, really. Go to the bank, get a money order for $25 Canadian in Canadian funds, and mail it. That's the only way I can think of to do
that
it.
That would work, yeah. Yeah. I would just take a check, too. I don't care. A personal check. I'm sure I can trust these people.
Yes.
Probably, anyway.
Sometimes banks won't cash American checks.
Oh, if that's the case, well then.
That's why a money order is the best way to go.
Yep.
Those who are not attending the charity shoot, yes, please send your mailing address. Deadline for orders is passed, so sorry, you missed the boat.
I did actually order a couple of extra shirts.
Shh, you're not supposed to tell them that.
But they're not up for grabs until after the charity shoot. Whatever I have left over after the charity shoot, I will post, and whoever first come, first serve.
Sure. Okay. NFA Range Safety Officer course on June 13th. That's in Dalhousie, New Brunswick. And for more information, contact Andrew Barr at andrew.barr26@gmail.com. So that's it for upcoming events. And now, the news!
Well, we had a pretty interesting week, news-wise.
Panic run
for the hills, basically. Yes, a lot of flurry of activity. Apparently it was overheard that an RCMP top brass individual stated something along the lines of this was going to be the year of the magazine, and what he meant by that apparently is that they are going to try to lock down the use of AR-15 pistol mags and the use of Beowulf mags in AR-15 so that we will actually be restricted to 5 rounds of center fire in a semi-automatic rifle up here in Canada, which is a silly law to begin with, and we haven't gotten around it because this is the way the law is written. What we're doing is completely legal, using magazines designed for other calibers or using magazines designed for pistols, which are allowed 10 rounds in Canada instead of 5. But they're trying to lock that down, apparently. And so there was a bit of a panic. People started, you know, going crazy on Facebook, myself included. I sent a bunch of information out to a bunch of people, hoping that people would start writing their MPs, and they did. And I would encourage you to not stop, you know, continue to write your MPs on this subject. But we have had a reply from one MP. I can't remember whose it was or where it was from, but the MP did state that he reiterated that, you know, the use of these magazines in rifles is completely legal still, and there are no plans to change that. So, you know, I will add in there are no plans that he knows of to change that.
yes, but, and there was a similar, I believe I saw a similar note from the Public Safety Minister, Stephen Blaney, basically saying the same thing.
Right.
Yeah.
However, it is an area of concern and always will be. We know that magazine restriction laws are dumb. We know that the bad guys don't care. They get around these laws one way or another. So anytime they try to further restrict us, we need to be concerned and we need to be active. There's no sense going on Facebook and venting to all of your gun-owning friends. They already know how you feel. You need to vent, and don't vent. You need to politely communicate with your MP, with those people who are in the government. Let them know that you're not happy with their proposed changes. And we need to do that en masse. Lots of people need to do that to let them know this is going to be another CZ-858 and Swiss Arms deal for them. This will not be a quiet event if they try to do this. We need to let them know that we are willing and able to kick up a big fuss if they try to further restrict us. Because why would they try to restrict us? We're not the bad guys. It brings no safety to anybody by restricting good people. So,
yeah, I would be really interested to see how they expect to enforce this as well, because magazines are not regulated in the sense that, you know, if you don't have a gun for that magazine, you're not allowed to own the magazine. Anybody can own the magazine. It's not regulated that way, right?
Correct.
You don't even need a license to own a magazine.
Nope.
So if I own a bunch of LAR-15s and I have them at the range, or they're in my range bag, they'd have to catch me actually physically shooting them in order.
That's right. The only way they could do this is to actually change the law. The RCMP can't just arbitrarily enforce laws that don't exist. Yeah. However, that does not mean that the RCMP can't try, and they can't come up with something, or they might lobby to get the law actually changed. I mean, they are a powerful force. Hmm. So,
If you think this one, and one thing that could really change this is of course an election.
That's right.
So it's more important than ever to make sure that the people who are not anti-gun stay
in
power.
Yeah, because that's it. It's not, you know, we've mentioned this before. The conservatives aren't really pro-gun. They're just not anti-gun.
Yeah.
And the rest of the parties are, except for the Libertarian Party, which I wish had a better following because
they are actually very pro-gun.
They are pro-gun. They are pro personal property. They're pro less taxes. They're pro less government. You know, they're a fantastic party. Just unfortunately, they just don't have any legs yet. I would really hope within a couple of years they can grow that and actually get something to get, you know, even into the opposition or even just on the board somewhere.
Well, just getting one seat would be huge.
That would be huge.
You know? Yep. That's how it starts.
That's it.
And So send your donations to Libertarian Party and then vote conservative.
There you go. That's what you got to do, sadly, this time around. We don't have that choice yet, but we're getting there.
Yeah. Then there's some writings probably do have candidates for Libertarian. But
there's actually quite a few. I'm a member of the Libertarian Facebook page, and there are many, actually, candidates in many different writings across Canada. They're growing very quickly.
Yep.
So I really hope that they can take hold of some power here at some point.
Yep. And then we also would, on this date being the one anniversary of the Moncton shooting of the RCMP officers, we'd like to once again extend our, I don't know, condolences, our, you know, thoughts go out to the families of those who died that day. So since it's kind of landed on the exact day that we record the show, we thought we would mention it, in memory of that.
Yep. Yeah. All the flags were at half mast here in New Brunswick today. So it took me a minute to figure out why they were down, but, it came to me quite quickly and yeah, it, you know, sad day, but, hopefully we can find some closure in this and move forward and, you know, resolve to not let it happen again.
Yep. All right. Main topic.
Moving right along. This is going to be a quick one this week.
That's what she said.
Well, that's, you're hilarious. That's because Trevor's not here with, you know.
Yeah, 14 million things
of gun-related things that he did, which is great. I mean, obviously, we need him back. Otherwise, we're going to be back to half-hour shows.
Yeah.
Trevor, come back and do lots of gun stuff.
So we thought tonight that we would do sort of a discussion about guns that are the best bang for your buck. So these are not necessarily the best guns. They're not necessarily the cheapest guns. They're the best gun for the money.
Right. And this would be, I hope, interesting for maybe some new shooters, people who are new into the sport and don't have, you know, don't have a lot of experience in picking out a good gun to start off with. I mean, these, you know, as we go through them, you'll realize these are not high-end guns. Mm-hmm. And these are not guns that you would buy and want to keep for the rest of your life. These are guns that get you going.
Some
of them you would keep for the rest of your life, sure.
Yeah.
But for the most part, these are guns that get you going, get you into the sport for not a lot of money, but at the same time, you can be assured that you're not picking up junk.
Yep.
It's not cheap because it's cheap. It's just inexpensive.
That's right. So the way we did this, we kind of broke it up into categories. So by firearm type. More or less. So we got a few extras in there. We're going to start with 22 long rifle.
Yeah, I figured it was a fitting place to start because if you tack it at the end, nobody's listening at that point. It's like, oh, 22 is whatever. Nobody cares about those. But yeah, no, I mean, if you're starting out shooting, I think a 22 is the way to go. It is, you know, it is getting a bit more difficult to find 22 ammo. And 22 ammo isn't as cheap as it used to be, but it's still the cheapest. So,
yeah.
I think and to start... sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I was just going to repeat what you said just because I wasn't listening and didn't hear that you said it. So, yeah, perfect. It is. I mean, that's the thing. It's still cheaper than anything else, even though it's a little more expensive than it used to be.
Yeah. So I think to start out, it should come as no surprise to anybody who listens to this show that the Marlin 795 tops our list for best bang for your buck 22.
Especially
rifles.
Since Trevor's not on.
Especially since Trevor's not here. Both Owen and I have one of these. I've owned four of these in total. Still own two of them, and I own a variant of one as well. They are, if you don't know about the Marlin 795, you need to, A, listen to more back episodes of Slam Fire Radio, because we talk about them a lot. And two, go on the Marlin website or on CGN or on GOC or on your favorite gun forum and ask people about them. You're going to get good reviews. They're inexpensive. They are very, very accurate out of the box. They're very reliable. They like a whole bunch of different types of ammo. They're not terribly picky. And they're good quality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love the feel of mine. I've had guns that I've put red dots on, 22s I've had red dots on, and then scopes and things like that. This I just want to go iron sights with it. It's just that it just fits that gun for whatever reason.
I concur. Yeah. And the iron sights are not the best iron sights out there, but they're actually pretty good.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
The front post is quite narrow, which I like. I like a narrow front post because it lets you hone in on the accuracy. The rear notch, in my opinion, could just be a little larger, and that's really easy to fix with a small file.
Yeah.
I did that with mine. I just opened it up. I think I doubled it in size. I think I just doubled it in size exactly, and that was exactly where it needed to be, and I find it very, very accurate, very quick to the eye. I have, like I mentioned, I have three of them, I guess, in essence. And one of them is open sights, and that's the one that I leave in the truck, the one that goes with me just about everywhere I go. And I'm, you know, just, I won't say I'm just as accurate with it than I am with the one with the scope on it, but it's darn close. I was using it at the gravel pit too this week when I was shooting the Mark II. And same thing from across the gravel pit. You know, I had to pick out slightly larger rocks. I couldn't see them without the scope.
Yeah.
but you know, any rock that I could see within two or three shots, I could hit it. You know,
that's and pretty good for a 22.
Yeah, we're talking, you know, 100 to 150 to 170 yards. It's they're accurate little guns.
And did we talk about the price?
We didn't.
Oh, so you've got 180 written down, but I think it's probably close. I guess it depends on where you get it. Mine was under $200 out the door. So that's right. Taxes and everything.
Very nice. This was I just got this off Cabela's.ca tonight, and they're listing it at $180. And then there'll be taxes and shipping on that. But yeah, you're talking less than $200 typically. And $200 is not a lot to pay for a semi-auto 22, I don't think. There are cheaper 22s out there. I just don't think you're going to get the same quality and accuracy with them.
Yeah. Yeah, because you see a lot of like cheap Kuis and mm-hmm. stuff like that kicking around.
The Lakefield, which is a Kui knockoff, I think. And there's the Mossberg Plinkster, which some people love. But from what I've read, most people don't. I guess there are some good ones, and then there are some lemons, and so you do have to watch out for that. I should mention Trevor has the Remington 597, and he really likes that. There's a huge following of those. I think they're a bit more expensive, though, but still, you know, any of those would be good guns, but I think our top of the list would be the 795.
Yeah. And then the other, you've already mentioned the other one that's pretty good is the Savage Mark II.
Yeah.
That was my first 22 with a Savage Mark II.
For the price, those things are insanely accurate.
Oh, yeah.
They're bolt action, so you don't really need to worry about the reliability part of it. Hmm. Yeah, some of them do have issues with their magazines, and they, you know, some of them will have feeding issues, but that's easily fixed because a magazine only costs like $20.
Yeah, I've never had an issue with mine.
I had one. I had a magazine. What was it for? It was for a Stevens 300F, which was a 13-inch version of the Savage Mark II, but made by Stevens. Stevens and Savage are the same company, just different names. Stevens is the lower end version. But it wouldn't feed with a 10-round mag. I had to buy a 5-round mag, and then it fed flawlessly. So I don't understand that. That was just weird. But my Mark II, the one that I have currently, no problems with it at all. And like we said, very, very accurate.
Yeah.
I've seen these go up again, Anschutz go up against CZ 450s, like these, and those are higher, like you're talking $600-$700 for one of those rifles. Mm-hmm. And this being less than half the price, keeping up with them, no problem.
Yep. Yep. So that's 22, so that's rimfire rifle.
Yeah, so we're done with the boring talk now. You guys can tune back in. We're gonna move into center fire.
Bolt action center. We'll separate bolt action and semi out. So bolt action center fire. What's your pick?
Hands down. I mean, and again, it should come as no surprise to people who listen. Savage Axis.
Yeah.
I cannot get over how accurate the Savage Axis is. Now, bear in mind, the Savage Axis is not a high-end gun. It's not going to be something that you're going to want to use for competition shooting. It's not something you're going to want to keep for the rest of your life as a, you know, as an heirloom. It's not that type of gun.
It's quite a thin barrel, isn't it?
Very thin. Yeah. It's not a target rifle. It's a hunting rifle.
I know what you shot with it.
Yeah, that's true. That being said, I mean, I have produced some very, very small groups at 100 yards. I mean, we're talking almost quarter MOA.
Yep.
You know, I can do half MOA all day long. And when I, you know, the wind is right and the ammo gods smile down on me, quarter MOA is very possible with this factory stock Savage Axis. I've done, that's not true. I did a trigger job to it. That was it. You know, it's, they are just, they're amazing for, and less than $400 with the scope.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Now, the first thing you need to do is throw out the scope that it comes with and put a real scope on it. But if you're looking for something just to get out and do some deer hunting, a Savage Axis and 308 is going to do you very well.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely.
So
I picked Lee Enfield.
And that's only because we couldn't think of anything else.
Well, that was the thing. We were like, well, we should pick something with a bigger caliber, you know, because Savage Axis traditionally comes in 223. Most of them are, but you can get them in 20.
You can get them in 380 and 7mm, and I think you can get them in 30-06 too.
I think so.
So they can get them bigger, but we just couldn't think of another bolt-action firearm that was inexpensive but gave you good quality.
Yeah.
And then Owen suggested the Lee Enfield.
I mean, they've been around forever.
Well,
I mean,
basically forever, yes.
Basically, I mean,
I think Adam had one in the Garden of Eden with him.
There's just so many of them in Canada because they were, you know, an old war rifle. So they were, I can remember, you know, remember hearing stories about guys going to Sears and they'd be all sitting in a barrel and you could buy them
just
for like
pick one.
50 bucks. Yeah.
Yeah. Which one do you want? Well, you know, you paw through them, pick the one that has the least scratches on it or the most nicks out of the stock for how many. Wait, we're not going to talk about shooting Germans again, are we? That's Trevor's shtick. He needs to come and do that, so he gets yelled at, not me.
Yeah. So you know, there were just so many. I mean, everybody, it was almost assumed that around here that someone had a Lee Enfield.
Well, everybody I know has one. You have one, which was your dad's, right?
It was my grandfather's.
Or your grandfather's. Curtis's dad has one. I have one. I don't know if Trevor has one. I don't think he does, but he probably knows a bunch of people who do. I know there are people at his gun club that have them too. But what you want to look for there is a you know, if you want an inexpensive one. Now you're going to be shooting 3-03, which is getting harder to come by, but it is still factory produced. You still can get it. It has very similar ballistics to 308. It's just slightly lower than the 308, so it's going to be adequate for deer, no problem. Some people would use it on a moose too. I probably would, but you really got to watch your shot placement. I mean, it is a little bit less powerful than the 308. So, and the 308, I think, is marginal on a moose to begin with.
What? I'd shoot a moose with a 30-30.
Yeah. I mean, it can be done. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm always for, you know, using something that's adequate, but it you do have to make sure you got your shot placement.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's key for any caliber, but I think whenever you're using a caliber smaller than what would traditionally be used, you just got to be that much extra more careful.
Yeah, I guess I can agree with that, and I don't want to get off on a rabbit trail here, but I just hear so many people that around here that are using these gigantic guns that are way overpowered. Like, you do not need a 300 Win Mag.
No, you don't.
A deer to shoot anything. You really just don't need a 300 Win Mag.
You basically don't. I mean, if you're shooting out in the prairies where you've got, you know, a kilometer long shot before you get to your animal, then yes, you need that extra power so that you have the terminal ballistics. But when you're shooting in New Brunswick where your longest shot's going to be, you know, 300-400 yards, 308 is going to do just fine.
Yeah. No, and. Yeah, I've said it before on the show, and I'll say it again, that bigger caliber is just compensation for poor shot placement.
It is, and it's, a lot of people just...
People can't hit the broadside of a barn, you know.
So they get something bigger.
So they get, well, gee, that deer didn't go down, I better get a bigger gun.
Or they just want the biggest gun out there just because they want it, and you know, whatever.
And that's fine, and if that's the reason, then I actually support that.
Sure.
but don't tell me that you have to have a 30-06 to take down a whitetail.
No, you definitely don't, and yeah.
But some people think they do.
Some people do. Some people think that 30-06 or nothing. But no, I mean, there's nothing wrong with 30-06, and that's going to take down everything in the province as well. But at the same time, a 308 is going to do you just as well, I think. So anyway, back to the Lee Enfield.
Yes.
The ones you're going to be looking for would not be a full wood military surplus. Those ones are going to actually be quite expensive because they're starting to get rare. What you're going to be looking for is a sporterized Lee Enfield, and they will typically have Monte Carlo style stocks, wood stocks put on them. Some of them have synthetic stocks. Some of them will have the barrels reduced in length. They'll have scope rails attached to them. But you can usually get something like that. And it varies depending on the value of it or the condition of it. But I picked up one for $50. This was 3 years ago, I think. Mm-hmm. And I did do a bit of work to it. I needed to cut the barrel. I put a new front sight on it. And I think maybe I put $100 into it. So I got $100 into my Lee Enfield. And it shoots lights out, no problem. I didn't put a scope rail on it. I just shoot it with the peep sights that it came with. Mm-hmm. But it's great. $150, 3-03. You know, I can take anything in the province with it. I'd even shoot a bear with that, I guess. Don't see why not.
Oh, absolutely.
So, you know, if you need something it's inexpensive and it's going to do the trick, you know, I wouldn't turn my nose up at it just because it's an old gun.
Oh, no, absolutely. And a great first rifle, you know.
Yep.
So that's all we could think of for bolt action. Really, I mean, everything else, it was like we thought of it was, well, but then
there's a Remington
Savage
700.
Yeah.
Right? And that's an expensive, I mean, the thing is, expensive. That's a really good gun, but it's not really best bang for your buck.
It's not better than a Savage Axis.
I would argue that. I think it would be in terms of, it has a better stock. It probably has a smoother action. But in terms of accuracy and reliability, I would say it wouldn't be.
Yeah. And that's really, you know, when you're looking for best bang for your buck, it's, does it work good? And is it accurate enough? And is it reliable enough?
Yep.
And is it cheap? And when you look at those particular things,
I couldn't think of anything else. So if you guys think of anything, listeners, you know, a good bang for your buck centerfire rifle, you know, send us an email. We'd love to hear about it.
Handguns. We're kind of jumping around here a little bit. We'll go with handguns.
Yeah, handguns are cool. I like handguns.
So what's your...
Well, my first handgun that I ever had was a Norinco M93, I think it was. And it was the Colt Woodsman knockoff.
Oh, yes.
And I think it was $150. And I splurged and spent the extra $30 for a spare magazine. And so less than $200, I had a little .22 pistol. But that's not the one we're going to talk about. I just remember that because, you know, it was my first one and it was a Norinco. But
that's a pretty good one if you want to talk .22 handguns and break the category down even further.
That's true.
That's about as cheap as you can get right there.
It really is, if you can find them. They're hard to find these days, but they are inexpensive, and it worked flawlessly. I do not remember a single malfunction with that gun unless the ammo was dud.
Yeah,
but it always failed. It always extracted. It always shot. It always cycled. Like it was a great little gun. The only negative to it was so complicated to take apart. But the good news was you could completely clean it without taking it apart at all because the entire slide moved back. There was no ejection port.
Right.
It was like the Beretta.
Right.
So it just slide comes back and there's a huge space for it to come out. So it never stovepiped. So that was cool. But my second was a Norinco NP34. And I know your first, I think, was an MP22, right?
Yep.
And those are the SIG P228 and P226 knockoffs.
Yep.
And I paid around $300 for mine. And they go for $350 now. For that price, to get a SIG copy handgun that works, that's an amazing price because
it works pretty well.
The only negative that I can think of is the double action trigger pull.
Yeah,
that's it. And I'm sure that could be worked on.
Possibly, yeah. Well, yeah, you probably could swap out some spring because it was heavy.
Oh my goodness, was it heavy?
We put it. I remember. I think I must have had it up to rest a goosh one of the first times I was up, and maybe my black badge. I don't remember what I shot.
I think you shot your black badge with the Glock.
Did I? Okay.
Pretty sure.
I must have just had it up there. I have a feeling that Trevor put he had a trigger gauge to check the weight of the trigger or the trigger pull.
Yep.
And he put it on and it only went up to like 12 pounds and yeah. it maxed it out.
Yeah.
And it still hadn't broke.
They are heavy triggers.
So it was probably like a 15 or 20 pound trigger. Yeah. Yeah. It was hard to get that first shot accurate.
But after that, they were great. I remember one malfunction with mine, and it was actually ammo related. It wasn't even gun related. Mm-hmm. The gun just simply worked. I'm not a huge fan of the SIG personally, just because of the high bore axis. I'm spoiled. Shooting a Glock, I'm spoiled with that. But that's not to say this would not be a good first handgun, especially a first center fire handgun. Mm-hmm. Unless you're of the 45 persuasion.
Yes, you can get the Norinco Colt 1911, and they got a couple different versions of it.
Yep. They range in price from $325 to $400.
Yep. And there was some deals last year. I know a bunch of the guys in this area got them. You could get the gun and 1,000 rounds of ammo for $400.
Oh my.
Over $450 maybe. Yeah, or maybe it was $500. Anyway, it was cheap, whatever it was.
Wow.
It was a crazy good deal. Yeah.
You could just buy that, with the ammo and then just throw away the gun when you run out of ammo and you'd still be ahead.
Well, that was the thing. And like a lot of the guys around here bought one of them at that time just because it was such a good deal.
And here's the thing. People poo-poo the Norinco because they're Chinese made and they're copies, but the Norinco handguns mm-hmm. are good.
They are.
At least the experience that I've had with them, they are fantastically built. I mean, they're not pretty. There's tooling marks on the inside. Oh, yeah. I mean, they're scuffed up. They're not pretty, but they work. Like, they're reliable. Yep. And if you're looking for a gun that just works, I don't think you could go wrong.
Did we just talk about 1911s and reliable guns in the same sentence?
That is one of the anomalies that the 1911 has is the Norinco.
Yeah,
and it should be said two things. One, proper maintenance, of course, is required. But two, these are copies of the government and commander, the GI models. And so these are not the super tight tolerance fitting 1911s. These are sloppy, rattly guns. That's why they work.
The originals.
Yeah, that's why they work. Yeah. So, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, now the oddball out here, we couldn't let this one go without mentioning this gun. And this is...
We couldn't let China have all the fun.
we had to throw some love towards Russia. So most people are probably have already guessed. We're going to talk about the Tokarev TT-33.
Yeah.
And many of you may be scratching your head going, why would you talk about that handgun? Well, it's $200.
Yeah.
It's cheap ammo, available ammo, and it works.
Yeah. It is so ugly that you don't ever have to worry about anyone stealing it.
You can leave that at the range.
Yeah.
Unattended. You can go home for lunch and come back. It'll still be sitting there because it is ugly. But it works.
It looks uncomfortable to shoot. Like,
it
just,
is
just
a little uncomfortable to shoot.
Yeah. Yeah.
I fired one. I think Pierre-Luc had one.
It's kind of like, when you're a kid and you nail two pieces of wood in a right angle together to make, a pistol shape.
That's what this is.
It's kind of like what it is to hold this.
I don't know who invented it, but they did not have joints. It was like, I don't know who, maybe it was Gumby. I don't understand why they designed it like this. There's no grip angle. It's 90 degrees.
No,
it is. It's terrible. It's not comfortable to shoot, really, but it's not uncomfortable to shoot either. It's not painful to shoot, but it is snappy. I got to mention the 7.62 by 25 is the round it shoots, and it's sort of like a mini SIG 357 SIG round. So it's I don't even know what the dimensions are, but Anyway, whatever. I guess it'd be a 7.62 projectile, and it's a 25-millimeter long case. So I do know those dimensions, but it's like a 9mm stuffed into a 40-cal case. So it's a necked cartridge, a bottlenecked cartridge, and that really helps with feeding. There's mm-hmm. very few feeding issues because you're trying to put a small point into a very big hole, and it goes in every time. So they're very reliable, and because it's a bottleneck cartridge, it's very high pressure, very high-velocity projectile, and I got to tell you, it's snappy. it moves around in your hand a little bit because it's a single stack, which means it's very thin.
Yeah.
So you feel that recoil and you feel it moving. It's a lot of fun to shoot.
Doesn't Norinco make a kind of a knockoff of this?
I think Norinco does, and they make it in 9mm.
Yes. Yes, it is a 9mm.
Yep.
But it's not as... From what I've seen, I know one person around here who has one, and it didn't seem to be overly reliable.
Oh, okay. Well, I think you would probably find that just because, I mean, you're taking a gun... It's same with the 1911. You're taking a gun that's designed for one cartridge and chambering it for something else. You know, they're not designed for that. They were designed for the cartridge they were designed or built for.
Yeah.
So... If you were going to get one, I would recommend getting the original TT-33 with the 7.62x25. Now, don't be put off by that weird oddball caliber. It's still available as surplus ammo.
Yep.
You can still pick it up for not very much money. And the gun itself is $200.
Yep.
So, you know, it's inexpensive, works really well. You know, it's one of those best bang for your bucks. Now, it's not a lot of bucks you're putting out. So you're not getting a whole lot of bang. But for what you pay for it, I think it's a decent gun. And, you know, I would hope that nobody would show up to their black badge with one.
Or I know someone who was going to do that.
You could, but you would really have to make sure you know your gun. And,
yeah. And
be prepared to have, a lot of mags. There's only a 7-round mag, I think, single stack. So, you know, it's not a really good gun for action shooting, but if you just want to get out to the range and shoot a handgun and you don't have very much money, you know, that the Norinco is at $350 are putting you off, but $200 sounds good. I wouldn't look down my nose at you for shooting a Tokarev. I think they're pretty, in fact,
They even come with a holster.
Oh, they come with a holster. Nice.
A lot of them come with like the leather flap holster.
Perfect. Well, yeah, show up to IPSC with that.
Yeah.
Because you got to have the flap engaged if you're...
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
There may be other handguns out there, but those were the ones that I could think of.
They sort of sprung to mind as being sort of the good value ones.
Yeah. Shotguns.
All right. Shotguns.
Sorry.
I was just going to say, just bear in mind, you know, we are not talking about high-end guns. You know,
no.
We're not talking about Glocks for a reason.
No.
They're good guns. Glocks are amazing guns, but they better be for $800.
That's right. Yep.
All right, so shotguns.
Shotguns. There's going to be a lot of Mossberg in this list.
There is. Yeah, there is a lot of I think Mossberg makes a good shotgun, and they are still able to produce them for not a lot of money.
That's right.
Yeah, the Mossberg 500 / Maverick 88, it's basically the same gun.
Yep. A little bit cheaper stock on the Maverick. That's about it, isn't it?
Yeah, the Maverick also has a different safety placement. It has a cross bolt trigger safety as opposed to the Tang safety on the 500.
Yeah.
So if you want to put a pistol grip on a Mossberg-style gun, get the Maverick because you can engage a safety with your finger with the pistol grip. With with the Tang, it's hard. You have to actually break your grip on the grip to get your thumb up to the Tang to take the safety off. So something to bear in mind if you want to put a pistol grip on it. But... I have a Mossberg 500.
I had a Hatson that was like that.
Yeah, yep.
I think you had the Tang,
yep.
If I remember correctly. Or no, maybe it was some... No, I could be wrong about that.
Well, I don't remember.
I don't remember now what it had. But yeah. Yeah, no, they're not real pricey, about $300 or so.
Yeah, the Tang safety is not bad if you leave the straight stock on, the factory stock. In fact, I prefer it. It's left-hand, right-hand... You know, it's completely ambidextrous in that regard because it's in the center of the... I mean, it's on the Tang. It's in the center of the grip at the back. So it's a perfect spot for it. I really like the action on the 500 series shotguns. It's very, very simple. It doesn't have a loading gate like the 870. If you think of an 870, you flip it over, it has that little lifter. The lifter is in the way. With the 500, there's no lifter. There is a lifter. It's just off to the side. But you can stick your thumb right up into the port without jamming it or getting it stuck on the lifter. Like, I really prefer the 500 style of loading. The action is just well thought out, very simple, and very reliable, in my opinion. I've never had an issue.
Yeah. I've been looking around trying to find a real dirt cheap one, but every time I seemed to line one up, but the deal fell through. I was never able to get one.
But yep.
I was looking for a cheaper pump. But really, you know, you mentioned the Bremerton 870. They're right in there.
They are. Yep.
You know, they're not that expensive.
You're gonna pay about $150 more for an 870.
Yeah.
But it's not. That's not money poorly spent, in my opinion. The 870 is the world's most popular pump action shotgun for a reason.
Yep. Yep. And you get a lot of bang for your buck just in the fact that it does have 1,001 accessories.
Absolutely.
You know, it's the AR of the shotgun world.
It that really way. Is.
You know, Mossberg has a lot as well.
It does, but I don't think it. I think the 870 tops it out. I think you could probably, like a 1911 or an AR, you could probably build an 870 with all aftermarket parts.
Yep.
I don't think you would need to. You might need to buy a receiver, and that would be it.
Yeah.
But yeah, aftermarket parts are definitely prevalent with the 870. And they're good too. I just don't prefer their action. I prefer the 500 action,
yep.
But
yep.
they are good guns. I've owned them. I've owned a couple of them actually, and I've owned a Norinco. Oh, what was it? There's the Norinco Homeland Security. It's the Norinco 780, mm-hmm. which I'll talk about in just a second. But then I owned the other one, the Norinco. I can't remember the name of it, but it was an actual, a very good Chinese knockoff. It cost the same as a Remington 870 though, so I wouldn't really call it good bang for your buck because it was the same price as the real deal. But it was the same price because it was literally as good as the mm-hmm. real deal was. But the 780, the Homeland Security, if anybody offers to sell you one, in fact, if anybody offers to give you money to take one away, still run away. They are terrible. I mean, one exploded. On I think it was Jason McIntyre, Trevor's buddy there, Rusty Goose Gun Club. It blew up. It literally exploded in his hands when he fired it. They are just run.
Yeah.
You can get some cheap
I've never heard anything good about that gun.
No. Well, it was cheap.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I can think of. So, you know, there aren't very many Chinese shotgun knockoffs that we're going to talk about. And the reason for that is, yes, they're inexpensive, but you don't get very much for them either. You just get a gun that usually works.
And the interesting thing about, and this should be noted for those who don't know, you know, we say Norinco. Norinco is a brand that sells guns generally, you know, kind of under that brand, but they're not a company that makes all of these guns. Norinco that, you know, goes to different manufacturers or different factories and say, okay, I want you to make me the NP22 and I want you to make me, you know, the AR, the M4. I want you to, you know, this, you would do the shotgun. So they're coming from different manufacturers. So it's not the same manufacturer making the pistol as it is the shotgun.
That's right. Just because it says Norinco doesn't mean it's good. And just because it says Norinco doesn't mean it's bad.
That's right.
You really, there are good Norincos and there are bad Norincos. And you just got to know which ones are good and which ones are bad.
Yep, exactly.
And sometimes you find that out by buying one and giving it to your friend and having it explode on them.
Yeah. Yeah. And what about semi-shotguns?
I don't have any experience with semi-auto shotguns. The only one I can think of, and it's because you wrote it down, was the Mossberg 930. And the only reason we think of that is because it's not very expensive. It's $630. And I have read reviews on them, and most people say they are good guns.
Yep.
But I have no firsthand experience with semi-auto shotguns.
Yeah, I have a little bit, but it's mostly in the world of higher-end guns, you know, for waterfowl.
Yep.
You know, you're dealing with, you know, Beretta Extrema 2s and Benelli Super Black Eagles and, you know.
Yeah, the high-end stuff.
$1,800 to $2,200 shotguns. Yeah. You know, so they better be good.
They better be good, yeah.
At that price. Yeah, they better be flawless.
Yep.
But, for the cheaper semi-autos, I'm trying to think some of the tactical ones. What was that? The Benelli M4. That's still pretty pricey. You know, those are pretty good brand name, and they're pretty high end. So, yeah, Mossberg again wins out just because of the price range.
Yeah.
And there is a. I couldn't find it. That my brother-in-law has one. It's a Russian make. Is it the Baikal? Baikal. Yeah, the Baikal. He has a Baikal semi. And it was pretty cheap. It was only $500 or $600.
Yeah. Well, I've heard people talk about the Turkish semi-auto shotguns too, mm-hmm. but they're hit and miss from what I've read. Some okay. people love them, and some people are like, oh, this thing jammed. This is jam-o-matic.
Yeah. So, see, I didn't have really any experience or anything to know whether it was, you know, reliable or any good, so that's why I didn't put it down.
Right.
Yep.
Cool. Well, I guess that brings us into semi-center fires. Oh. So the big guns, the big dogs of the playground.
Yep.
So obviously SKS. There's only there's just one on our list here, and it's the SKS, and that's in honor of yep. Trevor, because he loves the SKS so much.
The only semi center fire rifle you need.
It's basically the only one. You don't need another one, because the thing is, if it doesn't fit you, you can just get a plastic Tabco stock and stick it on. Right. And Trevor is a huge fan of that because they're so adaptable. Adaptable? Yeah, that's a word.
You had Tabco on the brain there.
I had Tabco. There you go. Tabco. They are just so good. They're so comfortable to shoot. And you know, some people might say, oh, you're dressing up. But Trevor's like, no. No, you can't dress up the SKS enough,
you never
basically.
Put too much lipstick on a pig.
No, not this. No, it's amazing. Once you wipe that Cosmoline off, oh.
That 7.62 by 39, I mean, it'll take down an elephant. I mean, it's the most accurate round you could ever get.
And most powerful. That's the round the AK-47 uses.
Right.
The AK-47 has a banana clip, though, which is why the SKS isn't quite as good as an AK-47, because that banana clip on full auto basically cut a man in half.
Yes, that's right. Isn't it like, you can kill 47 because you can kill 47 people every time you pull
that's
the trigger.
That's right. AK-47 because you kill 47 people every time you pull the trigger. That's a fact, folks. That's a fact. You heard it
you
here
heard
on Slam Fire Radio.
Yeah. Courtesy of your friendly neighborhood American senator. Oh, dear.
Trevor has just had an aneurysm.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, though, the SKS is actually on our list.
Yes.
It's not top of our list. Actually, let's talk about the top of our list last, which is actually the bottom of the list, which is on here. But yeah, the SKS is actually on the list, and it would probably be our third choice, I would say.
Yeah.
It is very inexpensive, which is a huge...
I don't know that it would be our third choice. If you're really looking for bang for buck...
You know, it might be...
It's pretty good, I mean, for what you get... For the dollar value.
Well, name me another semi-auto center fire for $200.
Exactly. And it comes with a bayonet.
And it comes with a bayonet. And it comes for a stock designed for a 12-year-old.
Yeah. That's the only issue I have with those guns, really, as far as the bang for buck. Because most people in North America... have arms longer than a 12-year-old.
That's right. And you are going to have to put an aftermarket stock on it or put a lot of recoil pads on the back. Not for the recoil, just to build up that extra length of pull.
Yeah, but for people, if someone came to me and said, Owen, I've only got $200 to spend but I want a semi-auto rifle
and I want
that I can hunt with, this is what I got to tell them.
I'm with you. I mean, if they're adamant that they want a center fire or a semi-auto, then the SKS is the way to go. Yeah, they are going to have to spend another $100 on it to put a stock on it that fits them properly, or like I said, a bunch of recoil pads or something. You are going to have to fix it.
They can get by shooting it just the way it is.
Yep. And people say that the SKS has got terrible accuracy. Well, I'm here to tell you that it's probably true. It's not the most accurate rifle in the world. That being said, it's not the world's least accurate rifle.
And especially where we are, where you're not shooting anything out past 150 yards.
It's perfectly fine. You know, inside of 300 yards, I would say no problem on deer-sized or bigger animals.
I was going to say inside of 150, but...
Well...
the sights on them aren't much, but...
That's true. That is true. The rifle, I think, is capable...
Yes.
The round is capable at, you know, inside of 300 yards, but you are going to have to come up with a better way of sighting it. If you can get a red dot on it or a scope, then great. But if you're going to, you know, be limited to the iron sights that it comes with, I guess I'm with Owen here. Yeah, 150 yards or less.
But no, for what it is, it's pretty good.
For the price, I mean, that's the thing. It's a 7.62 by 39, which is comparable to the 30-30 in ballistics, which is no problem on whitetail deer.
Oh, yeah.
So, or bear. Even bear. Well, black bear around New Brunswick. I wouldn't try it on a grizzly, but...
No. Yeah, absolutely.
But, yeah.
I forget. Oh, yeah. And he gets another one of those guns, sort of like the Lee Enfield, that seems like everyone has one.
Yeah.
and they're.
Well, I don't have one. I should get one.
You don't have
no,
one.
I shouldn't.
I've got one. I've had two. I did an SKSD at one time, which is kind of cool.
The D.
And it, yeah, and it had an ATI stock, not even a TAPCO.
Oh, well, look at that.
Really moving up.
Love that.
Yeah, the SKSD is the one that takes the AK-47 mags.
Right. And, wait, does it?
Yeah.
I thought it took the duckbill mags, not the AK mags.
Oh, they actually, the D takes an AK mag.
Oh, interesting. Isn't that cool?
Double AK mag. Yeah, that's pretty neat.
Yeah. Cool. All right.
So we're going to talk about the M305?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think you know, and the Americans are going to hate us because they can't get them, but it's a mini. It's an M14 clone, and again, made by Norinco. But again, this is one of their good ones.
Yep.
Owen has one. Tell us about yours, Owen.
Yeah, I have one, and I got a pretty good deal on it, but I think generally they go for about $600, and it's chambered in .308, semi-auto, 18.5-inch barrel, the one I have, and I'm shooting one MOA with factory ammo.
Yeah, this is a semi-automatic rifle shooting .308 inside of an inch at 100 yards.
Yep.
That for $600.
Yeah.
I mean, that's that. I don't think you get much better than that.
I don't think so.
Not for bang. I mean, you want, if somebody says, you know, I got less than $1,000 and I want to get a good deer, moose, bear rifle for New Brunswick or any other province that has the same type of game animals, and I want a semi-auto and I want to be able to shoot out to 500 yards, get an M305.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it's, I've put more than a little bit of money. I put a stock on it, and because again, it had a little bit of that kind of short length of pull stock.
Well, it's a military surplus style rifle, and they're designed to be shot with people wearing either armor or big winter coats.
Yep, yeah, exactly. So, but anyway, I mean, I shot a bear with it in its original configuration.
Yeah. No problem. Did the bear die?
The bear died, yes.
Look at that. It works.
And it wasn't even good shot placement. I don't know what else to say about it. I've got a scope on it, and I did a few little things, I think, that accurized it maybe a little. Changed the op rod and stuff.
Yeah, one of the things that's nice about the M305 is because it's based on the M14 is there are a lot of aftermarket parts.
Yeah. Yep, so you can do a lot. It's another one of those rifles that's pretty easy to work on.
Yep. If you like to tweak, like to tinker, it's a good gun.
Yep.
But I think the one that tops the list.
Yes.
And
especially when you compare it, you know, that there's nothing else like it that's anywhere as close in price.
Nothing.
And, you know.
And this is Canadian dollars, remember. We're not even comparing with American, because you could probably find some American ones at similar prices, but that's American dollars too, which is, you know, a lot stronger than the Canadian dollar. In Canada, you will not find another rifle that we're about to mention for this price. Mm-hmm. What is it, Owen?
Da 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 da. The Norinco M4.
Yep.
Currently on sale. I don't know where you saw this price.
Marstar has them for
$530.
$530 for an AR-15.
Yeah. 14-inch barrel.
Yep. It was the M4 clone.
Yep.
And Rod Gultaka had one. What did he put through his 12,000 rounds before it finally broke?
I don't know.
And I don't think it broke in such a way that he couldn't keep using it if he didn't want to. He just decided to stop using it because he figured, well, 12,000 rounds later, he's got other ARs. He doesn't need to keep shooting it.
Yeah.
He put like 12,000 rounds through it or something like that, and the gun just kept working.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think they're supposed to shoot that many rounds. Is that they've got a service life.
Yeah,
surely.
That's a lot. And they just seem to be getting better and better. Everything I hear, they get better and better as the years go on. The quality, you know, the tooling inside, everything. Yep. They seem to just get better and more reliable. Yep. Yeah. But then, I mean, they're normally like $700. That's what they used to be.
Yes.
I think even now they're closer to $600.
Even still, $700 for an AR-15 that is that reliable. I mean, they're accurate. You really don't need to do anything to them except maybe put a red dot on it.
The next closest in price was the NEA, which was like $1,100-$1,200.
Yeah. You know, so almost double the price. In fact, double the price of the sale price.
Yep. So
Yeah. It is literally, I cannot think of another rifle where you would get more for the money.
Yep. And Brian Bolivar, he shoots competition with one.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
And we're talking service conditions. We're not talking, 100 meters. We're talking 600, 700, 800 meters.
Yeah.
They're shoot. I don't know if they shoot to 800. Maybe it's just 600.
I don't know. It's probably only 1,000 or 1,200. Brian would know.
Yeah. So.
But yeah. No, if you're looking for an AR-15 and you don't have a lot of money to spend, but you want to get into the AR-15 world, get an M4. Get a Norinco M4, man. You're not going to go wrong with that.
Oh, I would consider even now, even though I have a couple other ones.
Yeah, I'd get one just as a backup.
I would get one just as my main gun. I would have no problem running these things as my primary gun. You know, I don't think the chrome-lined barrel is probably as accurate as some, maybe. But
yeah, it's more accurate than the 11.5-inch barrel I used to have on my AR.
That's true.
18 MOA.
I don't know if I have a feeling that Bolivar might have swapped out the barrel on his.
Maybe. But so still, you don't have to.
You don't have to.
It's going to be accurate enough for if you want to run 3-gun or if you want to just plink at the range.
Yep.
You know? And again, it's a fantastic base if you want to start upgrading. Swap out the barrel, swap out the stock, swap out the trigger guard, swap out the hand grip. You know? There's all kinds of stuff you can do to it.
That's the great thing about the ARs is they're all interchangeable that way.
Module, yeah. And it does. It's the M4 clone, but it does have the railed receiver top and the carry handle that you see in the picture. If you go to Marstar and look at it, that comes off. It's not molded in, so you can take off the carry handle and put on a red dot if you want.
Yep.
So, yeah, or scope. I mean, if you wanted to, really. Yeah, like I said, I can't think of another gun that would be more suited to be on this list.
Nope. Pretty good. Awesome. Well, that is the main topic, so we should move on to listener feedback.
We should, and I just want to mention anybody who has a another gun that we may have failed to mention, write in. We love getting feedback, so write in. Let us know what it is that you have that you think is your best bang for your buck gun.
Great.
So then,
this one I'll read the first one. You take the second one. How's that sound?
Sure, I love it.
We'll go that way. From Sean, he says, "Gentlemen, first off, I wanted to thank you for all the great work you are doing. I'm an avid listener of the show, and I recommend it to as many people as I can. You have great content every week, besides the archery mumbo-jumbo."
Yes, Sean, I love you. You're awesome. Let's down with the archery. Even though I shot archery last week with Trevor. Shh, don't tell anyone.
And he says, "I look forward to every new episode. Some feedback from a Westerner here. I would love to have more news on Western Canada, shooting news and events. I feel we do not get enough publicity and need a little push, if you will. I am willing to help out where I can, if you want it. That being said, I was wondering if you would take a minute and like my club's Facebook page, Regina Association of Practical Shooters. We are practical shooting club based out of Regina, Saskatchewan, and we practice both IPSC and IDPA shooting. We are continually growing, and any help we can get is greatly appreciated. We also compete in ORA, that is Ontario Rifle Association, CQB matches, and various 3-gun shoots as well. Thanks for your time, fellas. Happy shooting."
Very nice. I think that's a great idea. Head over to, what was it again? Regina Association of Practical Shooters, so the RAPS, RAPS. Huh. That's sort of unfortunate. Yeah, go like their page. Go help them out. And Sean, absolutely, if you have upcoming events, send them in, and we'll mention them on the show. We'd love to do that for you. Next email comes to us from Sharp97, longtime listener and regular contributor, so it's nice to hear from him again. He says, "Hey guys, what up?" So a marked contrast between Sean and Sharp97. We get gentlemen from Sean, and Sharp97... bit more formal here. What up? All right, Sean.
Angsta, yo.
Dirty's not on this week. Have to find Double Up Buck, see where he's at. Okay, I hope you guys cover the ugly business with the RCMP this episode. We did. Thank you, Sharp, for reminding us to do that. As for my query, I started my first real job a couple of months ago, and now I'm starting to save up to expand my gun collection, but I'm not sure what I should get. Sharp, you should back up this show and listen to the last 45 minutes that we just talked about, because it might help you. Seeing as I hope to receive my RPAL soon, I'm not sure if I should get an AR-15, a handgun, or still go with the non-restricted route. Let's just first say that I would love to own my own IWI products, either the Tavor or the Jericho. On one hand, it's very unlikely that I will ever go shooting in the bush, but I also don't want to have to deal with an ATT. So, if I do purchase my gun before the bill changes that, it might be a factor. So yeah, bear in mind that we may not have ATTs to work with here anymore in the next couple of months. So that may be a factor for you. And for our American listeners, the ATT stands for Authorization to Transport, and that's basically the little permission slip that we get from the principal that lets us take our guns to the range. That's what that is. So we may be getting rid of that. Would be really cool. Anyways, he finishes up with, to sum up, is it worth paying the extra to get an unrestricted? And what do you guys think of the Jericho? Thanks again, Sharp97. I don't mind the Jericho. The Jericho is sort of a CZ Shadow knockoff. Not Shadow, the CZ SP-01 or whatever it is. It's that same style. It's dressed up a little bit differently. It's got a different look, but the way it works is very similar. From what I hear, they're great guns. I've dry fired one before. I don't think I've actually shot one, but I've dry fired one before, and it was neat. It had a good trigger on it. I like the look of it. Looks like a baby Desert Eagle is what it looks like. In fact, I think some people call it that.
I handled one of those this week, yesterday actually.
Oh, did you? What did you think of it?
Well, I thought it was heavy, basically.
Yeah, oh, it is. It is.
You know,
heavy.
It's an all steel gun.
Yeah. Well, that's a nice thing about it, though. It being that heavy and it being 9mm, you mean you're not going to get a whole lot of recoil.
Yes, that's right. Yep. But coming from a Glock to that, it was just unusual. You know, it felt big and heavy and clunky. But I didn't get a lot of chance to play with it. You know, but it seemed to be good. I was happy with it, I guess. So
yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think you'd go wrong with it. It wouldn't make it onto our best bang for your buck list, but it is a good gun, for sure, from what I've understood, or from what I understand, or what I've heard from other people. As for your AR or a non-restricted centerfire semi-auto rifle, I would look very closely at the Norinco AR-15.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing. If you're not going to go shooting in the woods, if this is a range gun, get an AR-15.
Yep.
It really is the pinnacle of centerfire semi-auto rifles right now. It's, yep. You know, there's a reason why almost every military force uses them in the world.
Yep.
I don't want to say every, but a lot of them do. There's a reason for that. They're very good guns. They are very... very configurable. They're very modular. I mean, we were just talking about this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back it up 5 minutes and listen again if you... we don't need to say it all over again. But
yeah. But having said that, if you want something along the lines of a Tavor, you may want to consider the...
Type 97?
The Type 97.
Yeah, about $1,000, I think.
Yeah, and I mean... even putting a flat top upper on it, which changes the gun completely, you're still way cheaper than a Tavor.
You are. That's true. It's a bullpup, so of course you get all of the weird handling,
mm-hmm.
manual of arms and whatnot. But if you want a bullpup and you can't afford the IW or the Tavor, I mean, who can? I can't. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Get a Type 97. I don't think it would be something that you're going to do overly well with in competitive action shooting, just because the manual of arms is so weird on it. And you could. I'm not saying you wouldn't. I'm just saying you would have a harder road to climb than somebody who's just running an AR, because ARs have very, very good ergonomics.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and he didn't say anything about price. I mean, there is Alberta Tactical Rifle. What's that? What's the name of that company?
I can't remember, but it's the non-restricted AR-15, basically.
Yeah.
But the problem with that is, if you can afford that, you can afford the Tavor.
That's the thing.
So just get a Tavor if that's what you want. Yeah. If you want to get a non-restricted semi-auto, You know, the T97 is one option. Mini 14 is an option. What else is there? I mean, there's CZ or the VZ58s.
Well, the M305.
The M305. I mean, there are options out there, but if you're looking for a lightweight 2-3 shooting or 5.56 shooting semi-auto, I think, especially since you say you're not going to be shooting it out in the woods, you're just going to shoot it at the range, get that Norinco AR.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah.
So anyway, thanks for writing in, and thanks for sending that link to that video. It was well done. I was just going to send you a reply back via email, but I can just say it now. Nobody else knows what I'm talking about, but you know, it was good. Want to get this next one?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Sure. Thomas D. sent us a bunch of pictures, which we can't show you.
I'll hold them up to the microphone. Format. Hold on. Yeah, he finished up his M14. I think this is the guy who asked us the question about the rail. And so he finally got the rail, it looks like, and he has it installed. It looks really cool. Looks really good. Nice looking M14, man.
Great. Sorry, I'm reading ahead and I'm just laughing.
Right.
You going to read it? Or?
Oh, you want me to read it? Okay. Well, you're lead host. I was just waiting. I wasn't going to jump in line here.
I don't like bossing you around. I'm not like Trevor.
Are you kidding me? Yes, you do. All right. This next one comes to us from Edith. He says, "Hey, Eeyore, Tigger, and Rabbit."
Woohoo! Tigger loves bouncing.
No, I'm pretty sure you're Eeyore.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Trevor's probably Tigger because he's got the ADD going on. And that leaves me with Rabbit, and I don't know.
I can't do a Rabbit impression.
So. I can't remember what Rabbit's role was on Winnie the Pooh, so I don't know.
Rabbit's kind of mean. He's not very nice.
Mean?
Kind of cranky.
Well, that's me.
Is it?
Perfect. Right. Maybe Trevor's Rabbit, then. I'll be Tigger. Just have some more Dr. Pepper, and then I'll go off the wall. Anyway, so Edith writes, "Just wanted to give you an update on the passport situation. The real, quote-unquote real, birth certificate has finally made it to the house, and it went in the mail the following day. With extra money paid to the government that screwed it up in the first place, so we're hoping the remaining 3 weeks will be enough to get the passport back in time so Styx can go to the charity shoot. Looking forward to meeting all of you in person. Keep up the great work. Edith." So basically, you're coming without him, right? Is what's happening here. Edith, you're going to leave Styx behind because he couldn't get his button gear quick enough to get his passport, even though he only had, I mean, I can understand, he only had 1 year. It was only 365 days, really, to get this done. So I understand. You know, it's hard to do, you know, you might as well wait till last month. Just giving you a hard time, Styx. We love you. We hope you make it up, too, because I can't wait to meet you and Edith. Going to be good.
All right. And this next one comes from Spencer. "Hey, guys. I just finished the last episode, and I was surprised you didn't mention the Springfield XD or XTM series as a Glock alternative. Also, is your 7.62 by 39 really steel core, or is it like what we get in the States, a lead core with a steel jacket and a copper wash? Shortest email from me ever."
Yeah, I scrolled down looking for the rest of it. Yeah, two lines, huh? The reason we didn't mention the Springfield is because I don't know. I can tell you why I didn't mention it, because I have zero experience with it.
I'm not 100% sure, but I think the barrel's too short.
Yeah, we may not even be able to get them.
I don't think we can even. I'm just gonna do. I was doing a quick look to.
Well, while he does that,
we could get the tactical, what they call the tactical models, which are 5-inch, but I think the service models are all 4-inch.
Which is 0.25 inches too short.
Yeah.
Actually, it's 0.18 inches too short. Yeah. Yep. Terrible. 7.62 by 39. From what I understand, it's actually lead core with steel jacket and copper wash, just like what you guys have. It's not really steel core.
No.
So...
All right.
There's that. That's it.
Ta-da.
Ta-da.
If you would like to send an email to the show, send it to slamfireradio@gmail.com. And we will read it.
We will. Likely. And we may edit it so that we can read it.
Okay. iTunes review.
Yes. We have one from Primetime 2015. He wrote this back on June 3rd. So that's yesterday.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He titles it Recommended Podcast. So that's good. Just so you know, Primetime, you were the 80th five-star review that we've gotten.
Wow.
From the Canadian iTunes. We have another 20 or so on the American. So thank you for helping us reach a goal. That's amazing. So he writes, Slam Fire Radio is a most enjoyable podcast. The three hosts, and sometimes guests as well, enjoy ribbing and teasing each other throughout each episode. These podcasts are fun, enjoyable, quote-unquote informative. Thanks for that. Thanks. Yeah. We're just sort of informative, apparently. Actually, yes, that's true, because we say that ourselves. So enjoyable, informative, and fun. The hosts generally stay on topic-ish, but like your favorite gun store conversations, the topics conversations tend to wander and zigzag. The hosts tend to regroup and get back on topic, even if the topic is milk or honey or SKS Tapco coolness. I highly recommend this podcast to all my friends. Well, thank you, Primetime. That was good. I enjoyed that for sure. Yeah, sometimes on task and on topic, but not always. Actually just checking really quick the American feed to see if we have any new American ones.
Okay.
Because it takes a minute for me to do that, but I'm gonna look here. And if I just finish this sentence with six more words, I'll have an answer for you. I didn't count. Was that six more
words? Well, I was trying to figure out, do we only have 80 people that listen to us on iTunes?
Apparently,
yeah.
Nope. The last one we got from the American feed was somebody that said partridge. So I'm not even going to read it. It was the one from Matt M. from Texas. So yeah, we've got 20 on the American and 80 on the Canadian. We have exactly 100 five-star reviews on iTunes. That's awesome.
But we have 1,213 likes on Facebook.
Yeah. So everybody who's liked us on Facebook has not gone over and left us a review. That's a slacker, is what that is.
I'm afraid so.
Oh, we kid. we thank each and every one of you for sending your iTunes reviews and your likes on Facebook. We love them.
Yep. Shoutouts.
Well, I've got a shout out to Derek for sure, because Derek let me play with submachine guns. Because why would I not shout him out? And Chuck. Chuck's the owner of the store there. He actually sold me that CCI ammo at a discount. So thank you, awesome. Chuck. That was awesome of you.
Cool. I have a shout out to Paul, who is a new listener to the show because he just found out about it yesterday.
Hi, Paul.
And I told him about it, but he's very involved in the NFA.
Very good.
And,
cool.
Just wanted to give him a shout out because hopefully he's listening.
Awesome.
And check out all the Crusader podcasts.
All the Crusader podcasts.
Let us start this sentence again. Check out Crusader Podcast Network. Check out all the podcasts at the Crusader Podcast Network at crusaderpodcasts.com.
Only took you 5 tries. Not bad.
Ugh.
And I'm not even going to edit it.
I'm not even drinking. Can you get drunk on water?
I think you can, actually.
Join any of or all of our National Firearms Associations. Check us out on Gun Owners of Canada. Like us on Facebook. We are, like I said, we are at 1213. And that's it. That's the show. So long, everybody.
We'll see you next week.
Hug your guns.
And take somebody shooting.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something. When the talking is over,
it's time to get a gun. We actually didn't screw up the ending. That was weird.
Funny, and Trevor's not here.
Yeah, we always screw up the ending when Trevor's here. It must be Trevor. Trevor must screw up the ending.
There it is.
You know this is an outtake now.
Yeah.